Roman Fever by Edith Wharton is read for us by Maria Tucci.
From the table at which they'd been lunching, two American ladies of ripe but well-cared-for middle age moved across the lofty terrace of the Roman restaurant and, leaning on its parapet, looked first at each other and then down on the outspread glories of the Palatine and the Forum with the same expression of vague but benevolent approval. They both contemplated the view in silence with a sort of diffused serenity which might have been borrowed from the spring effulgence of the Roman skies. The luncheon hour was long past, and the two had their end of the vast terrace to themselves. At its opposite extremity, a few groups, detained by a lingering look at the outspread city, were gathering up guidebooks and fumbling for tips. The last of them scattered, and the two ladies were alone on the air-washed height. "Well, I don't see why we shouldn't just stay here," said Mrs. Slade, a lady of high color and energetic brows. Two derelict basket chairs stood near, and she pushed them into the angle of the parapet and settled herself in one, her gaze upon the Palatine. "After all, it's still the most beautiful view in the world."
"It always will be to me," assented her friend, Mrs. Ansley.
"It's a view we've both been familiar with for a good many years. When we first met here, we were younger than our girls are now. You remember?"
"Oh, yes, I remember," murmured Mrs. Ansley. "There's the head waiter wondering," she interpolated.
She was evidently far less sure than her companion of herself and of her rights in the world. "I'll cure him of wondering," said Mrs. Slade, signing to the head waiter. She explained that she and a friend were old lovers of Rome and would like to spend the end of the afternoon looking down on the view. The head waiter, bowing over her gratuity, assured her that the ladies were most welcome and would be still more so if they would condescend to remain for dinner. A full moon night, they would remember. Mrs. Slade's black brows drew together as though references to the moon were out of place and even unwelcome. But she smiled away her frown as the head waiter retreated. "Well, why not? We might do worse. There's no knowing, I suppose, when the girls will be back. Do you even know back from where? I don't."
Mrs. Ansley colored slightly. I think those young Italian aviators we met at the embassy invited them to fly to Tarquinia for tea. I suppose they'll want to wait and fly back by moonlight."
"Moonlight, moonlight. What a part it still plays. Do you suppose they're as sentimental as we were?"
"I've come to the conclusion that I don't in the least know what they are," said Mrs. Ansley, "and perhaps we didn't know much more about each other."
"No, perhaps we didn't."
Her friend gave her a shy glance. I never should have supposed you were sentimental, Alida."
"Well, perhaps I wasn't." Mrs. Slade drew her lids together in retrospect, and for a few moments, the two ladies who had been intimate since childhood reflected how little they knew each other. Each one, of course, had a label ready to attach to the other's name. Mrs. Delphin Slade, for instance, would have told herself, or anyone who asked her, that Mrs. Horace Ansley, 25 years ago, had been exquisitely lovely. No, you wouldn't believe it, would you? No, of course, still charming, distinguished. Well, as a girl, she had been exquisite. Far more beautiful than her daughter Barbara. Though certainly Babs, according to the new standards at any rate, was more effective, had more edge, as they say. Funny where she got it, with those two nullities as parents. Yes, Horace Ansley was, well, just the duplicate of his wife. Museum specimens of old New York. Good-looking, irreproachable, exemplary. Mrs. Slade and Mrs. Ansley had lived opposite each other, actually as well as figuratively, for years. When the drawing room curtains in number 20 East 73rd Street were renewed, number 23 across the way was always aware of it. And of all the movings, buyings, travels, anniversaries, illnesses, the tame chronicle of an estimable pair, little of it escaped Mrs. Slade. But she had grown bored with it by the time her husband made his big coup in Wall Street. And when they bought in Upper Park Avenue, had already begun to think, "I'd rather live opposite a speakeasy for a change. At least one might see it raided."